This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of WrestleNomics Radio. I'm Brandon Thurston, broadcasting on demand from Buffalo, New York, where today is Sunday, March 28th, 2021. And today we're back, and Chris Gull is going to help me get through the subjects, the topics in the wrestling economics world of the week. WrestleMania tickets have gone on sale. How many are left? The WWE Thunderdome goes to the Sun Dome in Tampa after WrestleMania. The WWE Network has launched on Peacock since we talked last. What's going on with the content and the standards and the practices? Impact Wrestling is moving to Thursday, as apparently NXT is moving to Tuesday. The NFL TV deals have been finalized at substantial increases. What does that mean for the future of wrestling TV rights values? The Roads to the Top, a reality show featuring Cody and Brandy, is coming to TNT. AEW is running a house show. The WrestleNomics survey featuring the latest Net Promoter Score data is out on the Patreon right now. And I've been messing around with something called Python. More on what that is in the hour. But first, the latest in wrestling TV viewership, brought to you by the spreadsheet, the WrestleNomics viewership spreadsheet that all patrons get at patreon.com/WrestleNomics. Get access to the living document that I use to follow and update all the data on wrestling viewership. SmackDown last week, Friday, did its normal just over 2 million viewers on Fox. Looks like, according to the overnight ratings on Showbuzz, it did a similar performance, but we'll see what the finals are on Monday. This week on Monday, WWE Raw on the USA Network, 1.8 million viewers. That's within the range of normalcy for Raw, but it was unseated for the first time in a number of weeks, where it's led in the 18 to 49 demographic. It's led among all the other cable programs airing on Monday this week, going up against competition from TBS and TNT, as those networks aired NCAA basketball. March Madness is underway. As a result, WRAW was down about 11% versus the normal. Normal means median of the last 4 weeks, but M18 to 49, that's males. Men 18 to 49 was down 11%. The young adult audience of 18 to 34 was down 20% compared to normal. So Raw taking a little bit of a hit with men and with young adults. I usually try not to look too deeply into the smaller demo ratings that are provided in the M1234 and F1234, but since it makes sense to look here, we will look and note that the men, males, 12 to 34 category was down 21%. So a lot of young male viewers looks like deciding maybe to watch March Madness, or for whatever reason deciding not to watch this week. Again, that's for Raw. On Wednesday night, as we've only got two more weeks, it looks like, left in the Wednesday Night Wars. On the third to last week of the Wednesday Night Wars, AEW again just ahead of NXT in total audience, and more than doubling NXT in 18 to 49 viewers. AEW ranked number 6 on the day in 18 to 49. NXT ranked 29th on the day. AEW watched by 757,000 viewers. NXT watched by 678,000 viewers. And on Tuesday, Impact Wrestling did its lowest total audience of the year since December 29th of last year. 116,000 viewers, still just barely ranking in the top 150 in 18 to 49, ranking 146th on Tuesday. 116,000 viewers, that's down about 20% from the median of the last 4 weeks. March, the month of March, is almost over. It ends on Wednesday. That's the 31st. So the month is almost over. We're tracking this month by month. As we know, all TV is down. So how do these five wrestling TV shows compare to the trends of television overall? To determine that, we turn to our friends at showbuzzdaily.com. to give us the data that determines a metric that I call the non-news cable top 50, the top 50 TV programs that are not news programs for each day. And what does that rate of decline look like compared to the rate of decline for wrestling TV shows? And what we find is that total audience, non-news cable, down 24% as of the 25th of March. Everybody else is doing substantially better compared to the March of the prior year. NXT is even with the total audience that it was averaging in the newly pandemic time of March 2020. And so NXT is doing the best at a zero comparison, a 0% difference. After that, we've got a three-way tie at a negative 12% between SmackDown, Raw, and Dynamite. And then Impact is the program that is down the most by 14%. But again, all of those are faring better than the top 50 non-news cable, which is down 24%. But what about the 18 to 49 demographic? That's down among non-news cable 21%. Impact seems to be doing the best. I'm dealing with really small demographic ratings numbers. Hope to get some real Nielsen numbers eventually. But Impact appears to be up 32%, while non-news cable down 21%. After that, we've got AEW doing the next best at just a negative 10%. Then SmackDown doing a negative 16%. Again, this is versus the March of last year, March of this year. Raw down, let's do NXT. NXT down 20% and Raw down 21%, even with the trend of top 50 non-news cable. So we've got some in NXT and in Raw who are really close to the trend of TV overall, but nobody is doing worse than the trend of TV overall in 18 to 49. And the same is true for total audience. Again, that's comparing March of this year to March of last year. And so now, this week, to help me, because I was having an existential crisis as I was recording the episode of WrestleNomics Radio last week. I got through about 12 minutes of it, and as some people may know, which I've told some people in some of my various appearances on other podcasts, it takes me about 5 hours to record an episode of WrestleNomics because I stop and I start and I research. And I decided, instead of doing that, let's try having someone come on here and help me and be the Conrad to my never mind. And we'll discuss the day, the topics of the week. And so to join me now, a correspondent of WrestleNomics who has been on WrestleNomics before.
Yes.
In the we might call it the interregnum, in the time between when Chris Harrington went on to future endeavors and when the pandemic started and I started to do this every week. Chris Gullo is here.
Hey.
To join us. Welcome, Chris Gullo.
Well, thank you, Brandon. Thanks for having me. I'm very happy to be here. What you do is pretty awesome, and you have a really awesome listener base. I see when they comment, very active, and so
this is a big deal podcast.
Yes, it is.
I'm paying you in stage time today.
Well, I'm a stand-up comic. I've had a lot of that. So,
tell us a little bit about Chris Gullo before we start. Have you done things in the wrestling business?
It'll be 10 years later this year, but for at least 9 years, mostly ring announcing, but I've done a lot of refereeing too, and some managing and commentary, whatever, but mostly ring announcing and refereeing have been the main things that I've done. And do stand-up comedy on the side too. And as far as wrestling podcast, obviously I've been able to hop on here a couple times. We used to do Inside the Empire together, right now I have a podcast called Rediscovering Indies. It's a monthly podcast where we dive deep into a independent wrestling history topic. Actually, our XPW episode will be releasing this week in part one, because it's going to be a lot of parts, it seems like. But we've done a lot of cool things. We've done Del Gagne, Roland Alexander's APW, Blackcraft Wrestling. Like, there's well, and there's plenty more topics that we've done since we started it back in August.
Mm-hmm. We used to do Inside the Empire together, the Empire State Wrestling podcast. So I'm just going to put you in charge here in a moment. You're just going to ask me stuff and we'll go to town. But yeah, I guess we'll just we'll do it. Actually, come to think of it, the last time I was in a car that was going to an independent wrestling show, I think we were in the same car going to Excite Wrestling in March 2020.
Yeah, that would have been, was it March or was it February?
According to Cage Match, the very last professional wrestling match that I've had as of today was for Excite Wrestling in early March.
See, I did interviews on it. Yeah, it must be because I always thought my last show was the Squared Circle show I did.
Okay, but I wanted to bring this up because I distinctly remember, I might have been in the driver's seat, but I distinctly remember Chris Gullo in my back seat talking about how, the media is overplaying this COVID thing.
I was wrong. I get to be that I was wrong. I wasn't like a denier. I just didn't think it was that bad, but it was also the world shut down a week later. And then, hey, I'm a mask wearer. I keep my social distance. I have one of the vaccine shots. Can't wait to get my second one. So,
okay. Well, good for you. So yeah, you can take over now. Get in the driver's seat.
All right. So we'll kind of get into it with really, about 2 weeks away from WrestleMania. Tickets have gone on sale. It doesn't look like a number that was kind of thrown out there, which was the 45,000 each night, which, I personally thought was really, really interesting that they wanted to do that. But Brandon, so yeah, I mean, it looks like a lot of the pods have gone, but I even went on Ticketmaster myself today and saw a lot of single tickets for sale, and they might even be secondhand retailers, which if that's the case, I don't think there's going to be any COVID testing or quarantining. I didn't see all the details on a ticket. So
no, I don't think there's going to be any testing or quarantining required. You're right. FYI, only single seats are left. I'm looking at Saturday. That's what it says here on Ticketmaster. I looked a couple days ago though on the secondary market on sites like SeatGeek and Vivid Seats, and I saw the barrier to entry was something like $50 or $60. So I've heard some things that maybe all the tickets that they have that they could put on sale have not yet been put on sale. If you look at the Ticketmaster website, even just the day after tickets went on sale, it appeared that about 1,000 to 2,000 tickets were left for each day. And as people may know, the capacity is 25,000 for each day. So that would leave one to think that 24,000 tickets have been sold for each day. That was kind of the impression that I was under until someone told me that maybe not all of the tickets that are on sale currently are all the tickets that are going to be put on sale. So I don't know. I guess we'll see. Something that crossed my mind too is it's going to be interesting because April is Q2. The Q2 earnings report will happen probably in late July or early August, and it'll be Q2. So that'll be covering the period of April 1st to June 30th. Probably there won't be any additional live events with tickets sold, at least to this extent, by June 30th, I would think. And even we may talk about, too, the Sun Dome. Looks like they're going to be in the Sun Dome, according to the Sun Dome website, maybe through August. Who knows what'll happen? But anyway, point is, when the Q2 earnings report comes out in the summer, we may get some idea about the paid attendance. We basically always do because of the way that WWE reports their information. And the key performance indicators, they have historically broken out the average attendance for the quarter with and without WrestleMania. I just did a video about this. But I think we'll get an idea of what the paid attendance is by the summer. But we'll see. I mean, we'll get an eyeball view of how many people are actually there. But yeah, it does say on Ticketmaster, FYI, only single seats are left. You'll be sitting solo.
But, what was the final attendance number for the Super Bowl? Did they ever release that?
I know capacity was 25,000, and then I think they sold every ticket that they had to put out.
Every ticket was sold.
Cutouts.
Yeah. I mean, that seems about right.
Yeah. I didn't realize when I was watching the Super Bowl that, you know, they did like this helicopter shot and I was like, oh my God, there's like 50,000 people there. But apparently they put a bunch of cardboard cutouts in the stands. I wonder if they'll do that for WrestleMania. We'll see.
And honestly, it's a smart business tactic because I believe they charge for those cardboard cutouts. So a lot of sports teams did this throughout the whole pandemic. So imagine
they charge. What do you mean they charge
for? So cards? you can pay a price and then they'll put a cardboard cutout of you in the stands. A lot of sports teams did this in the pandemic. The Philadelphia Phillies, I'm a fan of, were doing it, and you paid. I think it was paid you like $40, and the whole rest of the season your cardboard cutouts.
It's an image of you.
It's an image of you there. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which is it's another brilliant idea to make money during the pandemic. Like the wrestling conventions that traditionally have tons of people at, you know, WrestleCon. I saw that they're doing the mail in your items and we'll have the people sign and send it back to you, which is something never really offered before for that type of convention.
Interesting. But I'm just glancing at SeatGeek here. You can get in Sunday for $60. You can get in Saturday for $58. So I take that for what it's worth. I mean, there's tickets, a lot of the tickets available, so let's say way up in the 300s, that's worth $200. So I'm guessing at least some of these tickets on the secondary market are being sold below face value. So it raises the question of did you know, scalpers pick off a lot of tickets off of Ticketmaster or whatever and think that, oh, this is going to instantly sell out and try to, you know, resell them for an upcharge or what happened here. But there's still, I'm looking at this map and there's blue all over it, but it's light blue in most sections. So.
All right. Shall we move on, Brandon?
Sure.
You brought it up. The Sun Dome, formerly known the Sun Dome, is now the Yuengling Center, will be the new home of the Thunderdome in Tampa beginning April 12th with Monday Night Raw. This is, of course, happening because, you know, Tropicana has to be there for baseball as the Tampa Bay Rays hit the field, I believe, the first or second week of April. So obviously they have to move there to the Sun Dome. And yeah, as you reported, it looks to be 4 months. How long do you really think it's going to be? Because I think they could base themselves in Florida, but possibly look for an outdoor venue come early summer.
Yeah, I don't know. I sort of entertain the idea that maybe they would stay at Raymond James Stadium because it's an outdoor venue and they could probably continue to, you know, it'd be safer to bring people into the stadium to be spectators. But no, they're going to go to the Sun Dome. It's not something that I've reported, but I've seen, I think it's Jacob Cohen on Twitter. Do you know who that is? That's the Florida wrestling fan who shares a lot of information. But it's on the Sun Dome website, apparently through August. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean that WWE is going to run with no fans through August, but that maybe, and I bet we could get the some information on the agreement because Florida has this sunshine law. I guess it depends on who owns the Sun Dome. With USF, University of Southern Florida, that might not be a state. It might not be eligible for a FOIA request, but people like John Alba and David Bixenspan would know. In other words, maybe there's a way we get a copy of the agreement between the Sun Dome and WWE. But I imagine that if they feel that, you know, they can go and run events safely or to a sufficient capacity to where they want to start running events again, that they will. But we'll see. UFC is going to run a full capacity event in the same month,
Jacksonville,
in April. Yeah, and it's already sold out.
Right? All tickets are sold out. Yep, which what stops WWE from going, all right, you know, take the Thunderdome down. We have the Sun Dome to August, but let's sell it. Let's just try to sell it every week.
Yeah,
I mean, you would get people traveling there just to go to a live wrestling show, live WWE show.
Yeah, I think the WWE clientele is a little bit different than the UFC clientele in that I think there's probably something about the UFC fan base or the kinds of people who will buy tickets for a UFC show that that kind of fan, I would guess, is more excited about going to an event, pandemic or not, than the average WWE ticket buyer.
Well, plus Dana White was the first to want to actually run a live sports event when the pandemic happened, so he wanted to run the fight card that they try to stop him and all that. And he wanted to buy the island and all that. So,
I'm sure Vince is upset about not being first, but he gets to say that they never stopped.
That is true. That is true. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of big things, of course, happened with WWE, with WrestleMania on the horizon, moving to the Yuengling Center. But a big thing that happened was WWE Network officially became part of Peacock on March 18th. And there's a lot to go with this here. First off, it has not been an easy transition. I know a lot of, we'll talk about that first. A lot of people don't think it's user friendly as far as you can't, you know, pause a live broadcast and rewind back, or say you a little late, can't start the pay-per-view until 8 o'clock. So you get there home at 8 o'clock and, oh, you can't rewind. And there's a lot of features that were great on the WWE Network that you do not have on Peacock.
Right. So I've poked around on the Peacock. I have not signed up for a premium subscription yet. I guess I will by WrestleMania. I guess I can't not watch WrestleMania, but I've messed around on it, and I know the search isn't very good. And I know the big thing that doesn't make sense is organizing events by year instead of organizing them by season instead of by year. And you have to just sort of figure out that season, whatever, 10 of WrestleMania is actually WrestleMania 10. That's probably a bad example, because that's the one that uses a number to
that's how Hulu used to do it back when you would watch old Raws, when Hulu would have, they used to do it like that.
Yeah. But I've gone through the network on Peacock, and I know there are these other things like pausing a live program, and the search is not as good. Not that the search was necessarily great with the W Network, but they did have the indexing in there. But I didn't find, and I know a lot of the content, the big issue is that a lot of the content is not going to move over until August, until SummerSlam, according to the press release that they put out. But I don't find the interface to be that much worse, at least when I'm using an Apple TV, and maybe the experience is different. People can tell us if it's not. It may be the experience is different on other devices versus what it is on Apple TV. But I sort of just sat there and said, all right, let me find a WCW pay-per-view, and let me find a Clash of the Champions, and let me find a WWE pay-per-view. And I was able to find, you know, let me find NXT TakeOver, because that TakeOvers are weird. Are they pay-per-views or are they not? But I was able to find the things that I randomly chose to try to find in relatively little amount of time. the other thing, though, is that they're censoring the content. We know that the Roddy Piper and Bad News Brown match, yep, as well as the promo that preceded it, is gone. According to the Hollywood Reporter, what's that quote that I sent you earlier today, Gullo? You have it on
I would have. I'd have to find the notes there.
Let me think. See if I can remember. Basically, they're saying that NBC Universal is going through all 17,000 hours of the WWE library, and they have decided to edit out the WrestleMania 6 match between Roddy Piper and Bad News Brown. They're editing out the segment between Vince McMahon and Booker T from Survivor Series 2005, where Vince McMahon uses the N-word. And actually, somebody DM'd me, and I haven't checked on this myself, but somebody told me that the video packages from the 1998 SummerSlam are missing. And I wonder maybe that's a way of not using the blackface stuff with the Nation of Domination DX parody. Yeah. Maybe that's what's happening there, but that's just something that somebody said to me. So maybe that's something that's happening.
Just as time goes on, more stuff will be edited out, I think, as they actually sit and watch the programming. I think they're almost tipped off, like, watch this first to see if this is offensive or not. Because those are like two of the biggest things fans bring up. But now, like you brought up, the DX parody of Nation of Domination, and there's a lot of other stuff that there's Terry Funk promos in Smoky Mountain that don't have great stereotypes of the Viennese. Like, well,
there's no end to it in the history of pro wrestling. The history of pro wrestling is
there's no end to it of
this business using all sorts of stereotypes, racial and otherwise, to elicit reactions. As a lot of people have said, this could be a slippery slope in terms of where do you stop, and do you by beginning this process of censoring some things, do you not leave the opening to say, oh, well, you care about this and the people in this group and not people in that group? Is it a slippery slope in that way? There's a Patreon audio that I did earlier this week where we talk about, I think, is it not the case that you're sort of erasing the history or letting people think that, oh, we never did anything like that? You know, it's not as if you're being totally transparent about this and putting out a statement and saying this is what we're doing. You're just quietly doing it. You're quietly removing Vince McMahon using the N-word.
Should they have the same disclaimers that Disney Plus puts in front of the Muppets?
What do they do? You'd have to tell me
that this episode does include racial insensitive
in the
comments. You know, we like to learn from this. Yeah. I think there's more than one episode, but the episode that I came upon was a Steve Martin hosted episode where he made like an Asian stereotype. So it might be like, hey, this was bad. Let's learn from our mistakes instead of just, you know, delete it at all. But yeah, so I do have that quote, just basically that they're making WWE aware of all the edits, you know, and they're going with their standards and practices, Peacocks. But I can't see WWE saying, oh, no, you have to leave that in there. Like, they're getting a lot of money a year. I
don't think WWE really minds what they do with the library. WWE is getting $1 billion over 5 years for this deal, which averages out to $200 million per year. To put that in some context, it's something we discussed about before, of course, here in WrestleNomics, but just to remind everybody, WWE makes about $1 billion per year in revenue. The SmackDown deal is worth $205 billion per year. The Raw deal is $265 billion per year. This is the US deals, not globally or anything. So it's like an additional SmackDown deal per year. And I think they're happy to have, the money, and the library is not a huge deal in terms of the general population who are going to engage with WWE content on Peacock. Probably the majority and certainly the biggest piece of the deal is the pay-per-views. Who's going to go through the library? Hardcore fans are. I've heard some speculation too that maybe this results in Peacock just sort of throwing their hands up and saying, we don't want to vet this entire library. Maybe we'll just not publish most of it. We'll not put a lot of it back on Peacock. Rick Cordella, who's the executive vice president and chief revenue officer for Peacock, and if press release quotes are any indication, he's the person who made the deal with Nick Khan, who is WWE's chief revenue officer and president. He said that they're not planning on not putting it all over. He said that they're planning on bringing it all over. It just takes time. He didn't mention vetting for content, but he said it takes time to move over the closed captioning and the metadata and things of that nature. So we'll see. I would tend to guess that not much more ends up being edited, but I'm sure people on Twitter will be watching closely.
Yeah, and it's just one of those things that obviously everyone just thinks it would just go right over there, but it clearly them going through it is why it's going to take a long time for it to actually be more, user friendly as far as being able to find what you're trying to find. I mean, at the end of the day, WWE wasn't going to put up some stuff we wanted anyways. They have tons of Crockett footage and Mid-South footage and Memphis and a lot of stuff that they were never going to put up anyway. So it's just one of those kind of, just got to find it elsewhere type scenarios. But here's one thing I do want to bring up while we're still on this. Do you ever get reports on WWE network numbers by country? Like as far as subscription rises and all that, because I already know of some people that have used a VPN and used an address of England or Australia. To keep the same network.
So WWE reports the domestic, the US subscriber numbers, and then they report international. It's about 73% domestic. It's about whatever the opposite of that is, 28% or 27% international. We don't get it in any more specific breakdown in terms of the international countries than that. Mm-hmm. But I would think whatever the leading countries are internationally are whatever the leading countries are in terms of of you know, I would think that the UK is the number one country outside of the US, but I think some people will use VPNs. I don't think it's going to be such a big number. First of all, I don't know what the future is going to hold as far as how is W going to continue to report information of any kind to their investors and into the public related to the W network. As people might know, for the last 7 years, they have reported the number of subscribers at the end of the period, the quarter, and the average subscribers throughout the quarter. So what are they even going to do now that the majority of their service has been handed off to Peacock, which, you know, it's a service that they don't own, that NBC Universal and Comcast own. So I don't know what information we're going to get about subscribers after Q1 2021. but I think, yes, some people are going to use VPNs, but I think it's not going to be such a huge number that it's going to, even if we were getting numbers, be that noticeable, if we were getting numbers. But that doesn't,
curious
that,
the international
doesn't mean that there aren't, it doesn't mean that there aren't opportunities for niche wrestling podcasts to obtain VPN sponsors, though. That is a legitimate piece of business.
All right. So as we head off of here and move on a little forward, kind of change company gears a little bit and talk about Impact Wrestling, who has made the decision beginning April 8th to move to Thursday nights, which it doesn't seem like anybody is upset about this decision. It's probably the best move with NXT moving to Tuesdays and with really Tuesday just being a crowded market as it is.
Yeah. So NXT has not announced publicly that they're going to move to Tuesday. Hopefully they are. Otherwise the joke's on Impact. There's reports, I think, from Meltzer that they're going to move on April 12th. They haven't announced that, but I guess it makes sense to wait and not cause confusion, to probably wait until the last Wednesday to say, hey, watch us next week on Tuesday. That said,
or even announce it on Takeover.
Also, I think it's interesting that Impact is going to run their first Thursday going head to head with NXT Takeover 2, which is going to be on Peacock. So they're still going to be running head to head against an NXT Takeover, and they're moving a week before NXT would make its move. I don't know why. Who knows? I wonder why not just wait until the following week? Maybe to give off some, you know, impression that we're not really moving because of NXT's move. I think it's the best thing for Impact to move to Thursday. If they had stayed on Tuesday and went head to head with NXT, we have an example in history of what happens when that happens. We had two Tuesdays, either in August or September, because there were 4 weeks there where NXT and AEW, because of playoffs in hockey and basketball, they were preempted to different times in the week on two occasions. NXT was moved from Wednesday to Tuesday at 8 p.m., running head to head with Impact, and Impact's viewership dropped somewhere between a third and a half. So if Impact decided to stick it out on Access and stay on Tuesday night, they would have probably lost one third to one half of their viewership. Now, where does Impact land in the grand scheme of things on Access? Well, since Impact Wrestling has had its numbers start to appear on the Showbuzz Daily top 150 that people like me look at every day, that's only been happening since December, since Impact has started to show up there. And since that time, I am aware of one other Access show that appeared in the top 150. So at least, and when I say top 150, we're talking about P18 to 49, not total viewership, but that's the advertising demo. And there's no other show that's probably coming close to Impact in terms of 18 to 49. So Impact is probably Access's number one show. If you don't want to have your number one show lose 33% to 50% of its audience. Yeah. So it was probably an easy decision for Access and for Impact to just move it to Thursday. And that's what they're going to do.
Yeah. And Thursdays are wide open. I mean, nobody's releasing internet shows or anything like that. I think Thursday may be the release date that the Roku channel puts up New Japan, but I think that's the only thing that happens on Thursdays. And that's obviously not,
nobody's watching,
make a difference.
Nobody's watching. Yeah. To be honest. Beyond Wrestling, excuse me, I think is running on Thursday, the signature series, right?
That does, yeah, that does air on
wrestling on 5 days a week now, starting in on April 12th. We'll be wrestling on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday, prime time.
I wait for the day that Saturdays and Sundays have wrestling again.
Right. No, nobody will take Sunday because they want to leave that slot open for pay-per-views. But yeah, maybe Access will pick up New Japan again and put that on Saturday night.
Well, I always thought NWA, since it's on demand anyway, should just put it on at 6:05 on Saturday and Fight. Like, I don't know why they don't just do that.
And to add to that, AEW is supposed to put another show on TNT in 2021.
Yes.
I wouldn't be surprised to see that go on Friday somewhere, but we'll see. Maybe not head-to-head with SmackDown, but I wouldn't be surprised to see that go on Friday. I have speculated in the past that maybe Saturday, because that was the first place that they preempted to over the summer. Mm-hmm. But maybe Friday. We'll see. That's just a guess. And maybe we'll talk about this now. The roads to the top.
Yeah, we can get right into that. Yeah.
I don't think we have a time slot for it. But go ahead. Introduce what roads to the top. I sent you the
press release. Well, I was just kind of... You did send me the press release, and I have that up here for you. Oh, where's the PDF? I did have the PDF up. There we go. All right, perfect. Yes, TNT has ordered Roads to the Top, a look inside the lives of AEW power couple Cody and Brandi Rhodes as they add a new chapter and member to the Rhodes family legacy. It's a new unscripted series, sorry, that goes behind the scenes of AEW. Just going here, Corey Henson, EVP, head of Unscripted for TBS, TNT, and True TV, added AEW fans know Brandi and Cody inside a ring, and Roads to the Top will peel back the curtain of their lives off the mat, running a business together as the stars of Dynamite, juggling friends and family, and introducing a new baby into the Rhodes dynasty is sure to be a wild ride. Since the late 60s, the Rhodes family has been in one spotlight or another, said Cody and Brandi Rhodes. People think they know us, but this show is the first true look behind the curtain and beyond the ring. They'll see us fail and succeed, but most importantly, they'll see us better than ourselves as we travel the roads to the top.
So a scripted series, which is a euphemism for reality TV in the TV industry, I've come to learn.
It's a new buzz term for it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Or unscripted series, excuse me.
Yeah, unscripted. Yeah.
We don't know of a debut premiere date. There's no premiere date announced as far as I know. No. It wasn't in that press release, certainly, but there's a trailer. I wouldn't be surprised to see this as the lead out of Dynamite whenever it comes out. To think about, I'm surprised I didn't think of this, before this came out, that if you think about how WWE makes money, AEW has a lot of those things covered in a much smaller degree. I would imagine that AEW is probably making a tenth or less, probably less than a tenth, one tenth of the revenue that WWE makes in a year. But you think about the ways that WWE makes money in terms of, well, ticket sales, if they can, merchandise sales, obviously, TV rights money. Okay, AEW's got that covered. Again, all these things to a smaller degree. But product licensing, starting to do video games and mobile games. Okay. Action figures, they're doing that. They don't do a streaming service, but they do pay-per-view sort of in that place. And one of the ways, though, that WWE makes money is they do these unscripted series, whether it's Total Divas, Total Bellas, or Miz and Mrs. Total Divas seems to be done, by the way. It's been a couple of years, I think, now since there's been a new season.
But I think it's just moved into Total Bellas now.
Total Bellas has kind of spun off and become, the main feature there. And Miz and Mrs. is still, still going. So
yep.
It looks to me like WWE makes somewhere around $20 million per year for their reality programming. That's not something that's explicitly reported, but it's reported within the other media segment, which if you make some assumptions about what everything else is worth in that segment, you can kind of figure it out. So somewhere around like a little bit less than $1 million per episode, something like that. So you probably, I would guess that the Roads to the Top would make somewhere around that, maybe on the lower end of that, just because it's the first season. So what would that mean, you know, out of it? I guess it depends on how many episodes the season is, but you could probably just, I don't know, $750,000 per episode, something like that, $750,000. And then multiply that by the number of episodes and figure that's roughly the revenue that goes to AEW for that. I think this is an AEW thing, not just something that Cody and Brandy are doing besides. I think it's included in the, and just by the fact that AEW is the one who sent out the press release makes me think that this is an AEW business thing. So it's
another, yeah. And I think the lead out.
Yeah.
Well, I think the lead out's a really big deal because, I mean, if you have on average about 750,000 people watching Dynamite, even if you grab a third of that for the 10 to 11 o'clock hour, that's probably better than what TNT has been doing.
Yeah. And this is another way for there to be synergy in the Turner world which is something that we've already seen a few examples of, right? Like, there was Snoop Dogg coming on to Dynamite in accompaniment with his appearances on the Go Big Show, right? Cody mm-hmm. being on that show yep. as well. Shaq, a TNT NBA analyst, coming on and having a match. Maybe there's other examples.
The Christmas Story stuff.
There you go. The Christmas.
That was a big deal. People slept on that. Like, this is a channel. TBS is known because they play the Christmas Story for 24 hours on Christmas. It's been their thing. Almost everybody knows that. And the fact that this year they had AEW like little clips of them playing the characters and stuff, that was a pretty big deal. Because a lot of people will sit and watch that 2 hours of the Christmas Story on Christmas on TBS, and they got exposed to AEW. I think people don't realize how big of a deal that actually was.
And so when we think about like how much money can an AEW or a WWE get for their TV rights in the future, everybody's aware of the ratings. We're following the ratings every week. But another thing that matters is how much does having your property, having your show, allow us to drive your audience to other shows on our network? So I think that's something that Turner is trying to see how much value can we get out of AEW? Can we get AEW by having AEW? Do we then get a promotional vehicle to get people to watch the Go Big Show? Do we get a promotional vehicle for people to watch more NBA basketball? Do we get a promotional vehicle for people to watch a new series called The Roads to the Top? So that's something to keep in mind when we think about what kind of TV rights deal is WWE going to get or AEW going to get when their term comes up in a couple of years. Ratings are important and ad rates are important, but how much value you can get out of the synergy of having your program is another factor that matters to you. So I guess to put that in some sort of concrete context, I guess like if this show does well, I don't know what well really means. That'll be another discussion, but if this show does really well, that bodes well for AEW's future TV rights fees. If it freaking bombs, well, then that's a problem, but I'm sure we'll watch it closely.
In the hobby, it's not easy being a fan of ripping packs or repacks. We hype ourselves up thinking, maybe I can pull a Ken Griffey Jr. rookie card, but with zero transparency on available cards and hit rates, it's all just a shot in the dark. Until now. Introducing Slab Packs from ArenaClub.com, the only repack that provides real value, a complete view of all possible cards, and clear hit rates for each one. Now, when I buy Slab Packs at Arena Club, it finally feels like I know what I'm getting. I was able to open an Arena Club slab pack, and I'll be honest, it was a lot better than what you normally do. Say you go to a card show and there's a random innocuous brown bag of cards, and yeah, you can open it and look, it's going to be junk. You know what I mean? Like, you know what you're probably going to get in those. Maybe you find that fun, and sometimes I do. Sometimes I like just opening up cards and saying, hey, look at some random cards or whatever. But if you're really in this game to find value and find particular cards, it sucks to have to buy these mystery packs, and it ends up being, you know, almost nothing, you know, nothing of value. Not with Arena Club. You get a display, again, of all available cards, hit rates, grading, so you know that when you're opening up the slab pack, you are going to get something valuable. You are getting something good. And Arena Club, in addition to having those great slab packs we just talked about, is also a marketplace for card collecting, buying, trading, selling, displaying, all that sort of stuff. But those Arena Club slab packs, man, they are revolutionizing the repack game with transparency. After your pulls are revealed, they'll immediately be placed in your vault for safekeeping or trading and selling, and you can have them officially graded by Arena Club as well. So again, sending these things off, it's going to be officially graded by Arena Club. And the Arena Club grading process is accurate, fast, and transparent, with full grade rationale provided and explanation of how your card was scored. So whether you're buying, selling, trading, or displaying, Arena Club is the card collecting platform that you have to check out. So right now, I've got a special offer here for Voices of Wrestling Network listeners. You can get 10% off of your first purchase by going to arenaclub.com/VOWnet. Again, that's arenaclub.com/VOWnet. Now, that's a crazy offer. That's 10% off a $400 slab pack. $40 off right there. 10% off your first purchase. No matter what that purchase is, 10% off. Again, that's arenaclub.com/VOWnet. arenaclub.com/VOWnet for 10% off your first purchase on Arena Club. And we thank them for sponsoring the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. What's going on, guys? This is Rich from the Flagship Podcast here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. If I could have a moment of your time, I'd like to tell you about one of our sponsors, Eufy Video Lock. Eufy Video Lock is a smart lock, a 2K camera, and a doorbell, all 3-in-1, offering you triple security. So you can have everything in one device rather than installing many pieces on your front door. But it's not just for security. The Eufy Video Lock is also for convenience. No more concerns about losing keys, and you can assign passwords to your family members and see them coming back home via the integrated cameras. Some other great features we love about the Eufy Video Lock is it is easy to install and set up with just a Phillips screwdriver, no drilling required. Keyless entry, no more fumbling for keys when your hands are full. You never have to worry about kids losing keys or passing among renters. You also have 0.3 second fingerprint recognition and 1 second unlocking. Again, 0.3 seconds, it's going to recognize your fingerprints, and in 1 second, it's going to unlock. And with the AI self-learning chip embedded, the more you use it, the more accurate it will be. Also, no battery anxiety. You have a rechargeable battery in there that could last around 4 months, and you will get a low battery notification before it runs out. Passcode unlocking, a remote control with a 2K clear sight, see who's at your door, and control from anywhere through the Eufy app. With enhanced night vision, you can have optimized view even in the evening. You can also secure your package delivery by view and two-way audio. And then best of all, no monthly fee. A bunch of other brands out there are going to charge you a monthly fee. You have your recordings locally, and you never have to pay for storage. Customer service, Eufy's got you handled as well. They are on standby for you 24/7, so you can enjoy a worry-free experience with an 18-month warranty, all backed by their professional customer service team. Contact them anytime by telephone, email, or live chat. Personally, as a homeowner, I love my Eufy Video Lock. I have the ability to see what's going on when I'm not home, when packages has arrived. And really the thing I love the most about it, the ease of being able to lock and unlock my doors without having to fumble with my keys and reach in my pocket, or wait, no, crap, they're in my backpack, all that sort of stuff. All this is happening while my dogs are barking at me. You know what? Not anymore with the Eufy Video Lock. I touch it. 0.3 second fingerprint recognition, 1 second. Door is unlocked. Much, much easier. So if you want to jump on board with Eufy Video Lock, search Eufy Video Lock. That is E-U-F-Y Video Lock. Again, that's Eufy Video Lock, E-U-F-Y Video Lock, or visit eufyofficial.com/videolock to see how you can gain complete control of your door.
Well, yeah, it's not just having the rights of, hey, it's live wrestling that, you know, people don't really watch on, you know, tape. So obviously that's the hottest property to have, but you can spin off other maybe cheaper programming. And that's the thing about wrestling. It's cheaper to produce compared to a lot of shows. And then reality shows are a lot cheap. So, I mean, you got a wrestling show that does very good ratings for your network, based on the rest of your shows, and then on top you can get cheaper programming spun off of that that will at least get a portion, a chunk of that pie. I mean, yeah, I think that does raise the value of AEW's TV rights huge, and I think that has been one of the things with WWE. You're not just buying a wrestling show, you're buying a brand that you can put on other things. I mean, you even see it with NBC on the Peacock. They have the Punky Brewster show, which they have, I think Alexa Bliss and maybe Sasha Banks. They have a few of the WWE wrestlers on their Punky Brewster show, which is in a Peacock exclusive. So
the Peacock, I insist that Peacock. You refer to it as the Peacock.
I like to call it the Peacock. Yeah, the Peacock. So it's a brand.
Yeah, there's a lot of cross promotion. That's probably already happening. But one of the things that Nick Khan hyped on the last earnings call was that you're going to see a lot of cross promotion between NBC Universal programs and WWE programs. For example, I think during the was the Super Bowl on NBC this year. Am I remembering that right? Or there was a playoff game that was on NBC, and that's when WWE put out this commercial with Triple H and Stephanie being.
It was the AFC East Championship that the Buffalo Bills were in.
Oh, okay. There we go.
Yes. Yeah, that's all
big,
I remember.
Big Bills fan. Chris Cola, by the way, broadcasting from a studio in Niagara Falls. We are distanced by many miles here.
Many miles, yes.
Yeah, as I'm sure you can tell from the production quality. But there was they put out that video where Triple H and Stephanie were being news anchors and they were announcing that WWE was coming to Peacock. I think that's the gist of it. Mm-hmm. But anyway, in other words, expect more cross promoting when NBC has a big sports event coming up. You might see a WWE person make a cameo, and you might see more NBC Universal TV show stars come and make an appearance, celebrity appearance on WWE programming, which everyone will love, I'm sure.
And I expect AEW talents to pop on TNT and TBS, especially TBS sitcoms. It's just really easy to just get a wrestler on there. It's not hard to do. You know, hey, play a wrestler in this wrestler episode. So that's definitely something I can absolutely see happening. And in Atlanta, a lot of the TNT, TBS, all the writers a lot are in Atlanta. So if, you know, Cody Rhodes is there and, you know, meeting with them, I could see a lot more of that.
Yep.
All right. So if we want to kind of jump around a little bit, we were talking about the NFL and talk about the big NFL rights deal that just happened. We're talking about rights, and this NFL deal is huge and spans among many networks, including the return of football to ABC, but as well as Amazon Prime even getting more.
Yes.
Streaming rights for games, which I think is a bigger deal than that's being talked about.
Yeah. I think Amazon getting the NFL, so they're going to get exclusive. They have exclusive rights. You might know this in more detail better than you do. They're getting exclusive rights to Thursday Night Football.
Yes. Which they did not have before. It would be an additional thing. You could watch in this and Amazon Prime, like,
right.
And I think they're the exclusive streamer. I don't know if it'll still air between Fox and CBS, but as far as streaming, exclusively on Amazon Prime.
But there's going to be some, I think all, right? Because some of them were on Fox, but there's going to be all Thursday night games.
They will be on Amazon Prime. Yeah.
You can only watch them through streaming.
As far as I believe, the wording was a little weird, but Amazon Prime does have exclusive games.
Someone's going to tweet me. I know. They're going to.
Yeah.
I think so, because they're going to have to figure out how they're going to produce this, because somebody else is not. This is not being carried by another major TV network. So somebody else is going to have to produce this for Amazon, or they're going to have to put together some sort of production team. But anyway, it looks like the NFL got a good upgrade for all their deals here. ESPN, by the way, I've heard is going to get ESPN/ABC is going to get one of the Super Bowl games in the rotation here. But I think there's two things here, in that it's another statement that the market for live sports rights is on the rise, at least for the biggest property. Now, does having to pay such enormous and now increasing fees for the NFL start to eat the lunch of those that are worth less than the NFL? I don't know. Maybe. But maybe this just signals that the value of everybody's live sports rights are on the rise. I'm not sure.
Yeah, they do have the exclusive rights to Thursday night games, by the way.
Okay. So you have to go You have to have Amazon Prime, which, by the way, most people in this country have Amazon Prime. So it's not as if this isn't a platform that most people don't have access to, like Peacock. I listened to Scott Galloway, who's a tech podcast and professor person that people may be familiar with. He points out often that more people have Amazon Prime than own a pet in this country and things like just weird.
But see, they don't have it really for the streaming.
No,
they have it
for other reasons. Yes.
Yes.
But they have Amazon Prime. So,
but Amazon has also stepped up their game with exclusivity. Like they bought the rights of Coming to America 2 and Borat. And now this is a pretty big deal.
So this sort of opens up. This is, you know, what's been speculated about on at least one WWE earnings conference call. Is that, are we going to have a day in the future, maybe in time for the next round of negotiations for WWE or AEW for that matter, where the potential buyers of your property are not just major cable networks or non-cable networks like Fox, but the FANGs, these giant companies, which are Facebook, Apple, Amazon, Netflix, and Google. Are they, obviously Amazon is interested in sports. They're doing the NFL and they're doing a variety of other international sports rights, right? There may even be a U.S. soccer thing, but are there going to be others that are going to get involved with live sports? Netflix hasn't yet. Would Google/YouTube? I don't know. Would Apple get involved in that? I don't know. And what am I? Did I name all of them here? Facebook.
Well, Facebook has. Remember, they did the WWE mixed tag team series. So
the impression I got is that
Facebook.
Yeah. So season one was U.S. only. Season two was worldwide. I don't know. The impression I get was that was not a rousing success, but I think it was an experiment to see if there was, if they could, you know, do something with live wrestling anyway.
They also aired LeVar Ball's Big Baller That's Brand right. Basketball League as well. Yeah.
That's right. But we'll see.
So Facebook has doubled.
Yeah. We'll see. It's something to think about and watch that does Netflix start to get involved with anything that's live? Do any of these other major tech companies start to get involved with anything that's live? Because these are companies that certainly can afford it. All these companies are, they're making money. They're not like some of the other big tech companies that are highly valued but are not yet profitable. So we will watch. I tend to believe that in the next round, AEW will get a large increase in TV rights fees. So I think it's substantially undervalued and was, you know, given a lower fee because it's a new program. And I think WWE is still probably undervalued, you know, as you mentioned, Golo. It's really expensive to produce a scripted TV show that's 1 hour. Mm-hmm. And you got to produce a few of those to replace a wrestling program that's two hours, or in the case of Raw, 3 hours. It's more expensive per episode and per hour than wrestling is. And a scripted TV show is only going to give you 20 some odd new episodes first run each year. A scripted TV show is not going to be very DVR proof. Wrestling is more DVR proof. It's not as DVR proof as the rest of the live sports world is, shoot sports, but it's more DVR proof than scripted programming. And it's still, you know, quite cheap. You know, I think it could cost, you know, somewhere around $5 million for a good 1 hour scripted drama. And again, you're only getting 20 some odd episodes a year, and Raw and SmackDown, AEW, they run, and NXT, they run, and even Impact run 52 weeks a year, or at least 50 weeks a year. And they're in non-pandemic times, they are live 52 weeks a year. So it's a pretty good deal, I think, for these cable companies. And they are going to continue to badly need the most popular programs that they have in the future to keep the value of their bundle together, to keep the value of their cable network together. Whether the future of cable TV is in the bundle or not, I think there's still going to be a large demand for popular live sports programming. And again, whether that's inside the bundle or outside the bundle, I think that value is going to continue to live there and still, for at least the next several years, grow there. Because I think there's still going to be an audience for this live programming. And the big question, I think, is like, where does something like NXT fall in, where they're not as highly viewed as even AEW is? Does NXT get an upgrade? We may or may not ever know. Their deal is up in September, and I don't get the sense that we're going to get details reported, leaked out by those who are making the deal. But we'll see. I'm sure we'll get an announcement whether or not it's renewed. And I would expect NXT to stay. And NXT is going to move to Tuesday because USA Network is absorbing all this hockey programming from NBC Sports Network. And I think the deal is not done. We know that the NHL has made a new deal to go back to be on ESPN.
Yep.
What people are calling the A package for the NHL. And probably NBCU is going to renew and get the B package, which presumably is going to include Wednesday night hockey.
Yeah. And, you know, just when you talk about the scripted series, here's the other thing, too, that scripted series run the risk of that wrestling really hasn't is a huge ratings drop off from the first episode to the second episode. We've seen it with wrestling, like a company will premiere like AEW and then it will drop off. But some of these drop offs for like, hey, there's a lot of buzz on this TV show. And then the next week, I mean, we're talking hundreds and thousands of hundreds and hundreds of thousands. You even saw with Young Rock had such a big premiere and it's keeps dropping down hundreds of thousands, like just like that. And you run a huge risk of that. Wrestling, even if it drops off, it never has a catastrophic drop like that.
Yeah. TV series finale is a good website to follow scripted programming ratings on. Yeah.
But all right. So next we can, move on kind of back to AEW, and they're actually running their first house show on Friday, April 9th during WrestleMania weekend. And that will be in Jacksonville. Obviously a lot of interesting things. This will not be a televised, not even something they'll put on Bleacher Report, which I thought would be something on Bleacher Report Live, is maybe even like a free thing like they've done Fighter Fest. Yeah, it's just a house show, and the distance between Jacksonville and Tampa is like three and a half hours, so it's not ideal either to get that audience, but it's a very interesting move by AEW, but probably a smart one.
Yeah, I've am mildly surprised, but it probably makes sense. I've speculated in the past that maybe we'll never see AEW run a house show, but here they are running a house show. It probably just made sense because they're going to, this is a Thursday, right? April 9th. And they're going to be taping on Wednesday, maybe on Tuesday too. I really don't know what their schedule is like.
I think Wednesday, Thursday is when you do the tapings.
Yeah. And this is right by WrestleMania. So they figure they probably have a strong population of wrestling fans in the driving distance, even though it is 3 hours. So it's probably not costing them much in terms of additional production or travel expenses or COVID testing. So it's just an extra day to sell tickets and sell merchandise. I mean, you got these traveling fans if they are there, and they're probably going to be strong merch buyers. So it's a revenue opportunity that probably doesn't cost them much extra expense to run. So it makes sense, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, and talents were going to stay there anyways. A lot of those talents are mostly appearing at like WrestleCon, but even some of them are doing some of the Mania weekend indie events. Not a lot of them, but some of them are. So it makes sense. If you're already in Florida, why not do it? You know, so.
Speaking of AEW, yes. Time Bill Collier versus John Moxley is coming up on Dark or Dark Elevation?
Dark Elevation.
Dark yes. Elevation. Big time Bill Collier. I heard he did very well, and this may not even be the only match that he had and that we'll be seeing from him upcoming in AEW.
From I hear the same rumblings. So.
So, but yeah, I think Bill Collier is, I know I'm biased because I know my region better than any other region. I'm most familiar with it, but he's definitely been somebody who's the always main event or always on a high profile mm-hmm. match in the indies, especially the indies that I've been on. I mean, he's like, he's always there. And, you know, he's somebody who's done a lot of main event matches, and he's always in the big matches, and he's somebody who's improved his ring work and his physique over time. It's he's one of the people that you look at and think like, why isn't he somewhere with TV? Why haven't we already seen him have a bunch of shots in a bunch of places? So it'll be interesting to see if anything more happens for him with AEW.
Yeah, I'm very happy for him.
Yeah.
One of the things about Bill is he can work with any type of style, you know, whether it's a technical wrestler or a high flyer or a big brawler, like Bill can put on a great match for almost everybody. He's elevated people locally with the matches he's had with them. So,
yeah, he's somebody who's I've often, like, you know, he'll be in the main event and I'll be in some other match well beforehand. So you get the chance to sort of stick your head out and watch and, you know, whether he's in there with somebody who's very talented or somebody who's very inexperienced or new or whatever, he can carry somebody through a really good match. And it's impressive how, you know, you kind of, the near falls happen and you get on the journey and the story of a main event match, get people sucked in no matter what. And he's somebody that the rest of the wrestling world should know about.
Yeah, I've had the pleasure to not only ring announcer, but to referee some of those main event matches. And yeah, I think you get a cardio with those near falls as well. So,
mm-hmm. Yes,
you get a workout for sure. Looking at the docket here, Brandon, you have a WrestleNomics survey to go over results.
A net promoter score. Do you know what a net promoter score is, Chris Gullo?
I'm not gonna lie to say I do.
So net promoter score I've done one data point of net promoter score, which were surveys that I did in late December and early January. That was part of the WrestleNomics 2020 industry report. So basically a net promoter score, to tell you the math behind it, is basically we ask you, how likely would you be to recommend this program on a scale? I should really be doing this on a scale of 1 to 10 or 0 to 10, but because I'm using Google Forms and Google Forms doesn't display 10 points like that very well, I've chosen to do 0 to 5. So 0 is defined as I would definitely not recommend it. 5 is defined as I would definitely recommend it. And so net promoter score, the math behind it is basically we define everybody who rates it a 5, that person is a promoter of that product. Everybody who rates it a 0 to a 3 is a detractor of that product. Everybody who rates it a 4 is a passive. We're not going to, you're irrelevant to our formula. So what it is we take the percentage of people who responded 5, and we subtract from that the percentage of people who responded 0 to 3. We take the percentage of promoters, we subtract the percentage of detractors. And from that, we have either a positive or a negative number, and we call that your net promoter score. And the leader in net promoter score is basically AEW, and they were in the January to December study and in the March study that I just completed. By the way, how do we obtain these responses? Rather than just sending a survey out on my Twitter account where I get lots of people who think like I do to respond to it, I put out a Facebook ad that, because we have patrons of WrestleNomics who are contributing financially to this wonderful endeavor, we have some money that I can use to invest in Facebook ads so that hopefully we're getting a more, not a perfectly random sample, but it is a more random sample than we would have otherwise. So there is basically an article is now, as of this afternoon, on patreon.com/WrestleNomics. Anybody can sign up for $5 a month and go through it and look at the results, and look at the charts. I've split out this time the regular viewers of each program from the occasional viewers of each program. And the results are that makes the results, I think, a bit more fair. But basically we see that that AEW is, so that the programs, by the way, are Raw, SmackDown, NXT, AEW Dynamite, Impact Wrestling, and Ring of Honor. And New Japan. Sample size for New Japan is pretty small. By one measurement, we have 15 regular viewers of New Japan responding to this survey. So that's a pretty small sample size that I'm not ready to take that too seriously. But if I can make this bigger here, the number of people, though, responding who say they are regular viewers of Raw is 124. Of SmackDown, 122. Of AEW, 114. So that's better. NXT is 77. The other brands, though, are smaller. Impact is 37. Ring of Honor is 25. And New Japan is 15. It's higher when we include occasional viewers. Impact, Ring of Honor, New Japan are still just under 100. Well, Impact is just under 100. Anyway, AEW is the leader among, in the regular viewer measurement, AEW leads with a plus 0.63, followed by, or actually New Japan does with its 15, but, you know, that's a small sample. Followed by that, you've got NXT with a plus 44, SmackDown with a plus 38, Raw with a plus 19. And then we've got Ring of Honor and Impact just barely over zero. Ring of Honor with a plus 0.9 and Impact with a plus 12. Again, those Ring of Honor, Impact, New Japan, all under 50 with the sample for regular viewers. But what do I get out of this? I guess I get not, I guess I'm starting to see some evidence that maybe there is a to some extent, there is a vocal minority of people who hate WWE and can't stand it. But there's an AEW that people are a lot more positive about. There's New Japan that people are a lot more positive about. And people are more positive about NXT, those who watch it, than they are about SmackDown, and certainly more so than Raw. But that does reflect sort of the relative differences that I hear in opinion, that I hear that people really don't like Raw. SmackDown is better. And NXT, while it's not as good as it was in the pre-USA Network era, critically, it is still, you know, better than the main roster programming. And AEW is better critically as well, and it performs better here in Net Promoter Score. Net Promoter Score is thought to be an indicator of how likely is this brand, this product, to grow in the future. And it is or it isn't, because if you got a high Net Promoter Score, the thought is that the people who are engaged with your product are promoting your product. And if you've got a low or a negative Net Promoter Score, the people who are engaged with your product fucking hate your product and are not going to promote it and are going to tell people to stay away from it. So that's kind of, these all kind of reflect my intuitions, but also moderate the notion that everybody hates main roster WWE.
I mean, when you just go on Twitter, it just seems that's the general theme. Mm-hmm. But, on year two, we have a Google Trends. They did research on.
Have you heard of Python?
Very barely. Like, I just looked it up. It's like an API for Google Trends.
It's sort of. It's a programming language.
Yeah.
So,
okay.
So I've done some things in the past that people might remember. I've done some research on cage match data, for one thing. And we had our friend Matt Schroeder, who's very good with Python. I've only, like, just in the last few weeks really started to study this and try to learn it. But Matt Schroeder has scraped, as of October of last year, I have the entire cage match database in two Excel spreadsheets, because it's just too big. There's literally over a million cells of data in that. It's just a programming language that you can do a lot of things with. You can scrape a lot of data with it. You can make programs with it. It's like, I think, basically like any other programming language. So I've started to use it, and there is I think what is called a library called PyTrends that you can use to scrape Google Trends data. And Google Trends has a lot of wrestling related data in it. And I think Google Trends, this is my standard, why do Google Trends matter and why do I think they're meaningful? Google Trends can, for one thing, tell us about web search volume. Web search volume is not necessarily positive. The most popular time in WWE's history for Google web search is June 2007. Do you know why, Chris Gullo?
The Chris Benoit murders.
Yes. So it's not always a good thing when your web search is very high. But I think it tells us how much are people thinking about something. And we can look at individual people. Just about every WWE wrestler has a topic tied to them that is meant to include all related queries. And the results that we get seem to be pretty intuitive. People like Dwayne Johnson and John Cena do very well, have very a high amount of web search volume. Roman Reigns does pretty well too. So anyway, the problem with Google web search is that you can only pull five topics at a time in the old fashioned way with their interface. Then anybody can check out at trends.google.com and you can change the time span going all the way back to 2004. You can pick just about any range of time that there is. You can choose the region, whether it's worldwide, United States, UK, any country. You can go by state even. But it's a very powerful tool, but it's limited in the standard interface. And it's also not a standard, like, absolute unit of measurement that you're being given. You're not being told, like, oh, there were this many million searches. You're being told a relative measurement, basically a percentage of the maximum of the query that you run. But anyway, if you can learn how to use Python, you can pull what I did. I pulled, I think, over 300 a series rather than 5 at a single time, so we can compare all of these very easily. So if you go on my Twitter, you'll find a table where I'm just beginning to experiment with Google web search, with Python scraping Google web search, where we find people like Dwayne Johnson and John Cena are among the leaders year to date, even though they're not appearing on W programming regularly. But Britt Baker in the last week did very well in Google web search. She was the second most searched for AEW personality, just behind The Big Show. Well, not just behind, but behind The Big Show. Bad Bunny is more searched for than John Cena in the same. This is the week of March 14th to March 20th. So you have Bad Bunny, by far the leader of all people associated with WWE right now, except for Dwayne Johnson, but Dwayne Johnson not really appearing on TV. But yeah, we have, just to run through it, Dwayne Johnson, Bad Bunny, Roman Reigns, Steve Austin, The Undertaker, Triple H, Brock Lesnar. How many regular full-time wrestlers have I mentioned so far? Randy Orton.
Roman Reigns. That was the only one. Yes. And Bad Bunny, I guess.
He's not really, but he's not going to be like a full-time wrestler.
Yeah. Right?
But we have Randy Orton at number 9, The Big Show at number 10, Rey Mysterio, Kane, Alexa Bliss, who I think is the first woman I've mentioned so far, Sasha Banks, Bill Goldberg, Shawn Michaels, Ric Flair, Becky Lynch. None of these people are on TV. Edge, Charlotte Flair. That's the top 20.
Yep.
That's, yeah. I mean, that's enough for now. This might be something that I might pull weekly, maybe. Something to say, oh, these are the most searched for people in the last week that just ended. So there's a lot more.
It is very interesting.
Yeah.
But like you said, a lot of people that aren't even, it's nostalgia lookups, like, oh yeah, who did Bill Goldberg wrestle on Nitro in 99? Like,
yeah, I think it is reflective of how much legacy or nostalgia is valued now than it used to be. One of the great complaints and frustrations of this era is how much WWE relies on talent of the past and can't create new stars. I mean, it's a complicated problem, but you know, not being able to create stars is another story. But I think there's something to just the fact that today we have such a great record of video, especially through streaming services and YouTube and things like that. It's so easy to revisit the past and to revisit the great moments of Steve Austin and The Undertaker and Triple H, whereas it's hard to revisit the moments of Bruno Sammartino now, or you know, a couple decades after his prime. So it's harder to be nostalgic, I think, in previous times than it is today. And but related to that, like, one of the things that I see that I think is sort of a predictor of how high somebody's web search volume is sort of just how long has the brand been alive, which is, Impact Wrestling greatly outranks Ring of Honor, even in a couple of years ago when I felt like Ring of Honor had a stronger brand presence than Impact Wrestling did. Impact Wrestling was still leading it because Impact Wrestling had this in its TNA days, had this longer, really they're about the same age, but Impact had this long history of being on Spike and being higher in the consciousness of the public than Ring of Honor ever did. So yeah, I don't know, appearing at least in these results ranking highly, I think has a lot to do with just how long have you been present in a high profile manner in public life.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. And then you talk about, like, things, you know, Google search and people can always be good. I mean, Impact had a lot of things that were, you know, buzzworthy for, even if it was for one night, with the Google search results that have ingrained it into You know, like they had Rampage Jackson wrestle for them, and you know, and Kurt Angle appeared, and this is all stuff too that a lot of podcasts drive this. Like, hey, we're covering this TNA episode, or we're covering that, and I think that drives a lot of it too. Because I could tell you, when I listen to those podcasts that cover previous things, I'm Googling stuff, and I'll do it with everything. Like if I watch, you know, American Crime Story, OJ Simpson trial, I'm like, oh, I'm going to learn more about this prosecutor and stuff. It's just a natural thing that people are doing. And I think that happens a lot too. If the podcast is covering a certain Impact Wrestling topic that happened, like, for example, we were just on the 10-year anniversary of the Jeff Hardy incident. Mm-hmm. People are listening to podcasts about that, and they're researching. And
that's why Dale Gagner's web search is just through the roof right now, because you're covering that.
Yeah.
People
some notable people listen to my podcast and told them about it. So,
yeah, but there's a lot more to do here. I can make this even more efficient in ways that would be too technical and boring to explain. But I've only really pulled together most of the names related to WWE and AEW. But this can be done and had been. You know, I did a similar study for the 2020 report, and I did it for New Japan also. So I can, in all likelihood, will do this for pull together a New Japan roster and get the information that's needed to do this for New Japan as well. We can do this regionally too, which is another thing that I have to weigh, is like, should I look at the US more often in the case of New Japan? Should I look at Japan? But there's interesting things to look at, like what's the web search for New Japan in the US versus Japan, where it's continued to grow year over year in Japan, but in 2019, the year that AEW launched, and in the pandemic year of 2020, it did fall off. So yeah, I think there's a lot of interesting stuff to look at here with Google web search. Again, why does it matter? It's not always a perfect measurement. It can be misleading, and you'll see big spikes when there's a scandal or there's something bad happens. When people die, that's their all-time peak, right? But if you look at, and this is something I also wrote about in the 2020 report, is that it was almost a predictor of all these declines that we've seen in consumer metrics for WWE. It started to decline in 2016. And then the following year, that's the year that paid attendance started to fall and merchandise started to fall. And it's a couple of years before network subscribers started to fall. So, and then I think there's also, if you even look back at when Impact Wrestling, their pay-per-view buy rates started to fall off, that coincided with some activity that we see in Google web search in terms of the year over year delta or difference. I think it coincides with Ring of Honor, their ticket sales beginning to fall year over year in 2019. So I think there's, it's easy to overread and overhype what web search means, but I think it can tell us something insightful too.
I mean, you'll probably have great colleague in the top 20 if you do this week coming up. So,
yeah, there's somebody I need to include, Great Khali, in this. He's because he's in the Hall of Fame.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, come on, the population of India, I'm sure they're very happy about Great Khali going in.
Yes. Eric Bischoff too, a big fan of WrestleMonics, is also in the Hall of Fame.
Is he really?
he quote tweets me all the time.
Yes. Nice. But yeah, so with that, anything else you want to go over, Brandon?
Oh, I don't know. We could do plugs. Is there anything that you want to plug that you haven't already plugged, Chris Gullo?
Not really. Like I said, just if you want to check out Rediscovering Indies social media, RTA Pod on Twitter, and then it's Rediscovering Indies on Facebook and Instagram. We do put a independent on this day in independent wrestling history fact every day. So you can, you know, drink your morning coffee, go to the Twitter, so the Facebook or the Instagram, and find out, like, for example, today's, it was Chris Hero defeated Raven to retain his IWA Mid-South Heavyweight Championship in 2003. Just fun things that you'll learn.
Who's managing that? Are you putting that together every day?
Yes. Wow. I am putting that together every day. It's looking at a lot of cage match results and other this day of wrestling histories, and just, I mean, I just like, oh, you know what? We got to put something for this promotion. I haven't done it, and I just find it. Yeah, it's it's not as much work as it sounds.
Okay.
Finding the photos is a little harder.
Yeah, interesting. So. Anything else to plug?
Just like I said, listen to Rediscovering the Indies. You know, other than wrestling, nothing really.
Wrestling
new.
Is out of business. I know stand-up comedy is out of business.
Well, stand-up comedy is opening up a little bit here in New York State. We're allowed to tell jokes in front of people next week. Okay. I actually have a show in Warren, Pennsylvania on April 17th. Sold out already, though. So wow. People are clamoring for comedy.
It's sold out. And are you yes. The headline draw?
I am not. I'm just not. Doing a 15-minute. And it's the.
But you're the feature then. You're semi-main event.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm doing a nice spot, you know, an attraction. And then I am doing some backstage interview stuff for a wrestling promotion in New Jersey on April 23rd, NFWs.
Okay. Well, where can they follow you? Do you want
to
follow
you? Yes, Chris Gullo on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. I've been able to get just Chris Gullo, which is pretty awesome. Oh, so wow. Twitter.com is Chris Gullo, yeah.
Okay, you can follow WrestleNomics. You can go to WrestleNomics.com and where...
Yeah.
I haven't posted anything since the AEW pay-per-view store, but there is the Patreon article on the Net Promoter Score. That is at patreon.com/WrestleNomics for all subscribers. All subscribers are $5 subscribers. That's all it costs.
It's a great deal.
To get access to stuff like the Net Promoter Score story that is brand new, but you can also get access to the WrestleNomics viewership spreadsheet, which have you checked that out? That is a massive...
I guess you could say, but just the amount of information that you're going to get on a consistent basis for $5 a month. Like, yeah.
I keep that up to date. I update that multiple times a week to follow the wrestling viewership stories that are out there. You can, patreon.com/WrestleNomics. You can follow WrestleNomics at WrestleNomics. You can follow me at Brandon Thurston, and I'm Brandon Thurston. You're Chris Gullo, and we'll talk to everybody next time.